Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Rule the Ridge podcast. I'm not doing my Alan Partridge recording from a hotel in Sheffield this time. Spooky, welcome back. Would you want to record from a hotel with me? Just record a podcast. I'm not making any other sort of advance on you.
What if I was actually in the room with you ordering room service?
Well, I could do that if you want to. I mean, it's notoriously overpriced and not very good quality, isn't it? But we can do that if you want.
Yeah. I'm up for that. It sounds like a jolly.
Yeah.
Trash right. The hotel room afterwards. I mean, that's the kind of the rock and roll thing to do.
Podcasters are the new rock and roll stars after all, aren't they?
There you go. Exactly.
I was talking about this on the little post for us pod the other day. We're quite a demonized breed now, podcasters, aren't we? Have you seen, like, it seems to be when podcasts first started happening, you know, there was kind of a lot of ire directed at, you know, the early days of the fighting cock and stuff when we were doing that. And maybe we didn't help ourselves fully in places, but still, I think the concept of actually just like podcasting wound people up. And then we've had a good few years now of being left alone and people just sort of realizing we're part of the content cycle. But I've just noticed again now, in the past few months, again, there's been this, you know, you're seeing these kind of, and it seems to be especially, I get that there's this archetypal male podcaster that either talks about like crypto or speaks in sort of a misogynistic fashion. But podcasters are getting it again now. There's like parodies of podcasters on TikTok. There's all sorts. You know, why can't they just leave us alone, mate?
Yeah, I mean, look, do you want the serious response or do you want banter?
Like,
I mean,
can we meet somewhere in the middle? Let's
yeah, yeah. The thing is, I don't think, as far as us, as far as me and you and the other guys, I don't think we take it that seriously. I mean, it's obviously a serious thing if, for example, you look over to what Flav's doing. It's his career. It's his livelihood, right? Okay, so he has to be professional in all forms of content and podcasting that he does across, you know.
When's he going to start doing that then? And...
you know, I think for the rest of us, you know, mate, it's always been therapy, right? And it's always been a better way to talk about things. I mean, back in the day, it was us meeting face to face, you know, in Crouch End, and we'd have beers, we'd sit around and we'd talk about the game. Sometimes we never got to see everybody at the actual game. And so it was a good way of just getting together and just chatting about Spurs. And that resonated. We would not be here doing this if there was not an audience. And I guess the point of it is, you don't have to like podcasts. You don't have to listen to them. You don't have to care about people's opinions. But at the same time, you're probably on Twitter caring about people's opinions delivered in a way where perhaps you do not quite grasp the tone of what you're reading, and the way that you respond ends up being a point scoring competition with the person. So you can slag off podcasts, you can say there's too many of them, but it's infinitely better doing this than it is typing threads and trying to talk to people that think you're a clown and a moron and are not willing to listen to what you say. You know, if you met them at Tottenham and you had a conversation with them, you'd get your point across and you'd probably find a middle ground with that person. On Twitter, you never will. And on here, I'd like to think that it kind of bridges the gap a little bit.
I think it definitely does. I think it's, you know, I think you can get enough of your personality that you share on Twitter out in this form, but also kind of show people, all right, he's not, I mean, he's a dick, but he's not that much of a dick. Do you know what I mean? That's what I tell myself anyway, you know, like, when I do this. But still, we'll stop going on about the victimhood of podcasting and talk about Tottenham Hotspur.
Oh, do we have to?
I know, right?
Spoil the pod by talking about Tottenham.
Let's just front load this, mate. Like, where are you at with everything right now? Because look, I'll lay my cards on the table, right? It was great to beat Forest. It was obviously good, especially seeing Liverpool mess up earlier on in the day. And it feels to me, it's so entitled. It feels so entitled. But really, finishing in the top four is par for us now, really. It should be considered kind of par.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's one of those things that despite all the issues and problems we've had over the year, at least, well, hopefully, fingers crossed, finishing the top four, so the season's not a total write-off. But also, like, it's such a miserable way to process football. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, great, we're doing our job. Isn't that fun? You know?
I think if this season was more of the back end of last season, I think we'd all be okay. We would, you know, the grand sacrifice that I made was, look, I'm willing to give up a bit of style if we've got this kind of very effective substance and we're getting the job done, we're bullying teams, we're aggressive, we're really well organised and the rest of it. And for whatever reason, that's not panned out this season, right? Whether it's injuries, whether, you know, we've taken a few steps back for whatever reason tactically, we've been a bit more fearful. Conte hasn't handled the PR at all well, and maybe that's just Conte. That's just the way he is. He's hyper competitive. I appreciate that he's someone who is quite obviously obsessive about football, but because of the messaging and the way that he is narrating his time at Spurs through the press conferences, it kind of drains you a little bit as a Spurs fan, and especially when the football loses that impact, it then becomes a question of how does it all make you feel? And most of us are sat here thinking, week to week, game to game, we don't feel great about it. It's not resonating. We're not connecting with it in the right way. So you try and step out of it and think, well, is this like a graft type of season? You know, not too dissimilar to the Scum up the road, where they went through a few hardships before they kind of found their groove and their rhythm. Is this what we're going through at the minute? Are we wrong to want him out? Are we wrong to do the same thing we always do as a football club and sack the manager and bring someone else in and start again? You know, is this what we need to do as a football club? Just shift and work through it. I'd say yes if we had the right energy from Conte. So the whole thing right now has just, I think, fallen apart. That the belief is, it's not, I don't see it as being something tangible from Conte. As much as he celebrates in the technical area, as much as he looks connected to the players, there's something lacking in amongst it. And I think you get down to the bare bones. Football is how it makes you feel. Everything else is a bonus at the end of the day. And depending on who you support, you might never see that bonus. Or that bonus might be something like, I don't know, finishing 10th in League Two because you've never done that before. You know, with Spurs, we should be doing a lot more than just finishing 4th because we have that capacity to do it. It just feels like another experiment has come to its end, really. And
did it? But this is the question, mate, like that I continually sort of find myself asking of Conte. Did it ever really start, though? You know, because it felt like within weeks of him being here, he was complaining about the club and he was just visibly unhappy. I've not at all, even when we did have the good run at the end of last year, it was great because we were beating Arsenal. I've never felt connected to him, man. I haven't. And maybe, yeah, in part, I would say I probably haven't allowed myself to feel connected to him. But he's done nothing at all to kind of, I feel, really make that effort. I watched that, you know, I just... whatever. I know this isn't messaging coming directly from Daniel Levy. It's a kind of the social team work on their own behalf. But I just sort of think, like, you know, the message, like putting out a Conte cam after that Forest game is such a woeful misinterpretation of what people want right now. You know, and I had a bite on it. But the thing is, you could see most of the comments in there were like, we don't care about this at the moment. The fellas that should just come out in the week and blame basically us for being unhappy with what's going on. And this is what irritates me, mate, you know, like, because we do, it's always seen as like, when you mention kind of what they're doing up the road right now, right? You can't think about them. It doesn't matter if we finish fourth. Well, of course you can think about them, though. Let's not play silly buggers. Like, of course it matters what Arsenal are doing. It will be shit if they win the league. Of course it's a black cloud over what we're doing. It just is. Like, that's just how it works. But it's kind of, for me, it's doubly painful at the moment, because it's not just like the very thought of Arsenal. We've seen them win stuff before. We've seen them win the fucking league at White Hart Lane, you know. But it's not just the thought of them winning something. It's seeing them kind of, like you say, sticking by somebody, buying into the project. And that stuff aside, just the noises that you hear from that toad, the way he is so linked to that club, the way he loves them, the way he presses all the right buttons for the fan base, for the players, to create a proper mob mentality, a siege mentality there.
Yeah,
it's enviable. It is enviable. And all that we have is this fella that's paid one of the highest wages in kind of world sport, just to come and continually look for an excuse as to why we cannot compete. When you've got them doing it up the road with similar budgets, a similar kind of infrastructure now. Yes, I know, I appreciate they've had their success previously. And I do also think there's something to be said for the general goodwill around Arsenal winning the league and how that morphs into performances from opposition. People can say you're just being bitter, but how many Leicester players are we now seeing come out and say, you just had Simpson the other day talking about a referee saying that he wanted them to win the league. So we can't pretend this stuff doesn't exist. Isn't it? You know, the narrative is set for Arsenal to win the league this year, but they are obviously helping themselves as well. What irritates me is that we seem to have not only everybody against us, but we just have this guy that is so prickly and so unengaging that I just want football to fuck off at the moment. That's kind of how I feel.
This is the thing about where I am, because like I keep repeating the same mistake. I kind of momentarily backed Mourinho as well, and the whole thing around changing the mentality of the team, even if it means sacrificing a bit of style to actually become a club that can win games ugly and work through the traits and the tropes that are perhaps have held us back in the past, the kind of naivety around it. But unfortunately, it didn't work out the way it should have worked out, because those managers, Mourinho and Conte, ultimately are not suited for a football club. And the reason is actually, it's a positive thing when you think about it. There's a lot of clubs out there that are a blank canvas, that their identities can be pulled left, right, and centre by whoever is managing their football club, right? Whereas Spurs have this kind of strong connection to who we are, what we are. And maybe that's held us back. And maybe that's where my sacrifice came in. Let's do something that goes against our principles, because it might get us over the line and we can get the monkey off our back. And then we can be ourselves again. Then we can be the culture club, the style, not style over substance, but the swagger and the swashbuckle and the rest of it. But let's get over this obstacle that we can never get over. But it doesn't work. It literally doesn't fuse well with everyone and everything. And as much as we're like, yeah, let's back Mourinho, let's do this with Conte, after a while, and you saw it this season, people started breaking. They were like, I've had enough of Conte's football. It's nothing to do with Daniel Levy. It became an Enoch out thing afterwards, after the fact. I'm not saying he's not accountable, because he's the one appointing these experimental managers. But the football broke us initially. We thought, what are we doing here, week to week? You know, this is not, you go for the football. You're literally there because you want to see Spurs entertain and everything else. You know, like I said, is a consequence of just how good you are. And Conte has us conditioned to think we're shit, conditioned to think that everything that we do is a miracle when it is a positive upturn. And it's just a weird way to manage expectations. And I think people have tapped out now. I think people are, I think supporters for the most part, you know, if they're honest with themselves, they know that the football ain't working. Obviously, people turn it into a political thing and it's like, he hasn't got the players. We've got the same players we had 10 years ago. It's like, mate, our players are fair enough. We need to move. We need to shift a few out. I'm not debating that. But this fallacy that they're absolutely dog shit and incapable when you compare our squad to the rest of the league is bollocks. I mean, we're in fourth spot and we've been pretty awful this season. So that kind of tells you, yeah, maybe without the injuries and maybe with a little bit more consistency and rotation here, there, like we could have done a lot more. But it just doesn't feel right now, you know, and that's just me trying to be honest, trying to be balanced. The way we surrendered both cups, I think it was poor. I think it was
pathetic, mate. It was, yeah, really, it was just,
I know we've got a bad record in domestic cup competitions. You know, Poch would often look towards the league, but we were often rampant in the league as well, right? So we were probably aiming too high, as we normally do. You know, trying to think of finishing top three, top two, top one.
Just thinking about that echo of glory, mate. That's what we're thinking about.
And that's fine when the football matches up to those sentiments. And I think with Conte, as much as I respect him, as much as I understand his obsessiveness is a powerful tool to have, as much as I'd like the club and us to find a common ground, and I don't know whether that means that we have to drop a couple hundred million every window, you know, even with all that stuff, there's still no guarantees, right? Because there's always a Chelsea, there's always a City, there's always a football club that spends a bit more and has that foundation of success from previous campaigns. So I just want us to be the best version of us, really. And I want us to know the club are doing the best they can possibly do to put us in a position to be competitive. The rest is just down to football, right? Under Conte, I think now we're just going through the motions. So it's a numbing experience. And I get what you mean. You know, I was happy we beat Forest. And all I could think about really afterwards was how many games we got left until the summer.
Yeah,
and then we're getting this typical Tottenham, innit? Next season, mate. We'll get it right next season. But here we are again.
But this is part of the problem for me, mate. I mean, look, for now, I'm fairly outspoken about this, you might say. It's just, it's
surprise.
It's got to be Pochettino about this summer. And I'm not saying it's the perfect appointment. I'm not saying there's no risk or there's no problems there. But for me, it crosses off a few things. It gets the kind of what if element. It crosses that off.
Mm.
We have a connection with the club again. We can start to feel the kind of love again. It's just, to me, it's just a bit of a circuit breaker while there are things in motion, right? We have Harry Kane, his sort of future up in the air. We have Heung-min Son, who is, you know, on the steady sort of decline now as he gets older. We're going to have to bring Hugo Lloris in. It's a real, like, transitional period for Tottenham. And it feels like we're always in one of those. But, I mean, I think at the moment we're in a real, proper transitional period. And I think for this time, I just want Pochettino back. I just want to feel connected. Because, you know, when you hear this, like, Enrique's top of the list, someone like that, Luis Enrique, it that sparks nothing in me at all. Absolutely nothing. It feels, again, like another Mourinho or Conte, different type of manager. But what I mean by that is a guy who has, yeah, he's won loads previously, but now he's older. His ideas are already starting to look a bit outdated. You know, that Spain team were horrible in the World Cup. Horrible to watch. Like, really, really horrible.
It's interesting.
I just don't want that anywhere near the... I can't... We've done, what, 3 years now? 3 years of this? It's... Let's just enjoy it again for a bit, you know.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I mean, you know what I'm like, right? I'm far too much of a deep thinker. I kind of attach myself to the philosophical stuff,
yeah.
And like I've said earlier, I've kind of gone against that in order to see what happens when we try something that isn't very Tottenham. And now I'm at the point where, do you know what? It just doesn't work. It doesn't work because we know what it is that we want. And yeah, we're quite fragile supporters, right? Because like we keep reaching for the stars and we can't quite touch them. And we are ambitious as a fan base. And I think that does fuel everything around us in terms of always looking to do better than what we're doing. But you're right. Going through a transitional time, if you bring in the wrong person, it doesn't end well because there might be a rough season or so, and people will turn on the manager and the board again, and then we just reboot again instead of restarting from scratch. With Poch, it isn't quite restarting from scratch, but what you get with Pochettino is that you know that there will be a connection there. Like you said, it'd be amplified amongst everyone, and we can buy into the roughness of perhaps a season that doesn't quite go the way that you want it to go because we've got to get rid of a bunch of players, we've got to bring in new players, and there's a kind of like a culture refinement process that has to happen again. You know, Poch is a new man. Levy has probably learnt his lessons, you would hope, from the last time out. But we buy into that. And that kind of harnesses a different type of atmosphere for everybody. We're all accepting because we're all on the same page. And we know where we're going. And we know what we plan to do. And we know how good it was under Poch the first time round. Yes, there's a risk associated to whether that can be repeated. Lots of people saying, don't go back, don't go back. Lots of people felt that Poch was a puppet, felt that he'd never had it in him to go to find that edge, to go up that extra bit of a level to really succeed. And people think, no, we need someone to come back. We need someone with a CV. We need someone to come in that is a winner. And it's like, mate, what are the last two managers appointed? What were they? It's, again, it comes back down to the way the club makes you feel about everything. And you can make it about trophies, which a lot of modern supporters and a lot of old timers seem to have latched onto. Where if you don't win something, it's a fucking waste of time. It literally isn't a waste of time. Most football clubs don't win things. We're in a position where we should really be competitive. But I've said this on a couple of podcasts. Tottenham were never serial winners as a football club. We'd win a couple of trophies every decade, maybe three in a decade. Right, in the time when football was on a level playing field. And then when it changed, it became even more difficult. Now, sure, we've had other clubs. You know, Leicester won a fucking FA Cup not that long ago. They won the league not that long ago. We've had other teams pick up cups. And it's not like we haven't tried to do that. But we've never been a football club that has collected silver with. We've just been relatively consistent and we love an adventure. So I guess what I'm saying is we don't define ourselves as a club that hoards trophies, but we're proud of the trophies that we do pick up. And that's all we're asking for, to get back to that kind of position. But going to Spurs was always, it was more than just, are we going to win something this season? Whereas I think now everyone's fixated on that. It's like, if you don't win anything, you've had a shit season. And I appreciate that we are thirsty for a ribbon to be planted on a cup and be lifted by a Spurs captain, right? I'm not saying that's not what I want that. I'm not saying that I don't want that, but I'm also saying that it's the other things that make you happy and content to be Spurs, and that's fucking going to games and looking forward to going to games and leaving the game thinking, you know, that was fucking brilliant. You had it under Pochettino, that togetherness, that bond. And those pricks down the road in the swamp have literally got the things that they used to mock us for. Oh, you got a fancy little football team that play pretty football and you're all together and you hold hands. And that's exactly what those pricks have got now. And that's what matters to them. City could beat them this season to the title. Now you go up to any gooner, you tell them, have you had a shit season? And they say, no, we've had a fucking brilliant season.
Well, they even said they had a brilliant season last year when they capitulated fourth place to us, you know?
Mm. I'm just saying that the let's not lose track of the of what it is that football should be about. And as much as it's great to have this dream that someone like Conte can give us a dimension that we've lacked and make us winners, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to feel as good as what a genuine version of Tottenham Hotspur is. And that genuine version of Tottenham Hotspur is deeply flawed. So we're in purgatory, mate. We're never out of purgatory. We're always trying to be better.
Always comes back to that every single time.
Yeah, that's Tottenham.
But this is kind of where I ask, you know, because I agree with a lot of your sentiment there. The only part I slightly question is the fact that we've never really been a trophies club. I would say we've won a lot more than a lot of other clubs, really. If you think about throughout our history, the amount of FA Cups we've won, a couple of UEFA Cups, you know, how many League Cups we won? 4 or 5, maybe?
I want to say 4. I'm not saying that trophies are not synonymous with Spurs. I mean, obviously in recent years, they definitely haven't been, right? But the football landscape has changed. People that bang on about 22 years or 30 odd years with one or two trophies, they miss out the context of where we started from to get into a position to actually be a viable team to be able to win trophies. And then all the cup finals that we've lost and semi-finals that we've gone out to, we've been a little bit unlucky as well as getting it wrong in terms of managerial appointments and decision making at a board level. But it's not like we haven't tried. And you're right, we do have a grand old history, right? But what I'm saying is we were never a Liverpool or a Man United. We were never a team that bossed an entire decade. You know, you have to go back to the 60s where we had a super team, really. I mean, you know, a team that we still talk about today, and most of us weren't even born to see it. We have pedigree. We have history. We're trailblazers. We've always been the first club to do mostly everything, right? And that's what makes us pretty special. But we kind of want to create we want to create new history now. And I guess where I've fallen back to is, let's just do it the Tottenham way. Let's stop asking people like Mourinho and Conte to come in and change us. Because like I said, we're not a blank canvas. We've got a strong identity and a strong heritage. So make the manager amplify the good things about this football club.
Exactly.
And rather than turn the club into something that the manager... Now, Chelsea can do that. And I know what people are going to say. They've won 2 Champions Leagues, mate. They've won everything. They've literally won everything. That's fine. And I'm not sitting here saying that I'm not a little bit jealous of every other club that wins things at a canter. But we didn't have laundered corrupt money. We haven't had oil money. We haven't had those advantages. And also, you look at Chelsea, who are they actually? Like, what identity do they actually have? They don't have anything. So therefore, it's easier for any manager to turn up there and mould them into whatever they want. And maybe that's the way you win in modern football. Maybe my sentiments need to be binned now, and maybe we just have to wait for a billionaire consortium or whatever to chuck money at everything, and then it becomes easy, and then it just becomes what kind of top tier manager can come in to manage the egos at a football club, and we can change him every 2 years. It won't matter because we're going to spend 200-300 million every summer, and we're always going to have superstars, and it's just going to be easy to win things. Do you get where I'm going?
I totally do, mate. It's
a difficult thing to wrap your head around, really, because it's like you want to win everything, but you then realise you've got to do it the way City do it and the way Chelsea do it. And occasionally people fuck up, right? Guardiola's drunk this season and he's literally rolling out the red carpet to them lot down the road.
It's a fine thing because he's still lauded as a genius because it's his protege that's winning it. You can tell that the desire, it's not the same as like kind of locking horns with Jurgen Klopp as it has been for the past few years, you know? And it's just, this is kind of what frustrates me about it. It frustrates me on one end that whenever Spurs come close to any sort of tangible success, there's a groundswell of just sentiment to see that not happen. There just is. It's not some kind of the world against us paranoia. It's true. Like, there's an entire culture of, like, memeing Tottenham Hotspur. We even get kind of, like, people that support kind of League Two clubs or talking about, like, Tottenham zero trophies and all this type of thing. You know, and I'm sure we could go on for ages about kind of the reasons behind this. Mm. You see some people talk about it being our entitlement or this or that. You know, I don't even, and I'm not just saying this for the sake of it, I don't even, like, completely discount the fact that there's a level of, like, veiled anti-Semitism to, like, the groundswell of opinion against Tottenham. Yeah. Because it's just bizarre. It's actually, it kind of is one of those things at first where it irritated me a bit. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, okay, all right, but we've got to kind of laugh along with it because everybody has a bit of a joke. But it just seems to be now that, like, we're kind of, in the pantomime of football, we're like the baddies, you know, and everyone, they just get so much joy out of us failing. And I think what's really turned my stomach this year is even despite the kind of, because I don't know, I'm very torn on, I don't really agree with the weaponizing of the Thomas Partey stuff to us. Arsenal fans are allowed to enjoy what their club's doing this year, right? And I don't think I don't fully feel that they need to kind of have it, like, thrown in their face every time they kind of win a game that they have Thomas Partey playing for. I think it's kind of crass, and I think it's not... I don't think that does anything to help sort of the victims of sexual trauma and sexual abuse at all, to have that kind of thing weaponized in a kind of a back-forth tennis game between football fans. The way certain sections of the fan base hold him up, the way Mikel Arteta decided to pretend that Thomas Partey was the victim. Nobody asked him to do that. He volunteered that himself. That's an issue. That's a separate issue, right? That's a different thing. But just seeing the kind of the way that is, just everything about them is being lauded right now. And yes, there's definitely a lot of jealousy there because I'm a Tottenham fan and it's Arsenal that people are all liking. But the thing that irritates me really, like, with all of this type of stuff, like you're touching on there, is, and what I think leads to this feeling of numbness, this jadedness, is that we are so desperate now for success. We're so desperate for it, and it's kind of the lack of direction, really, in a footballing sense, from Daniel Levy and the people in charge of the club. They're just so desperate to kind of impress, I would guess, I don't even know if we do have shareholders, but kind of people that have a stake in the club, be that sponsors, be that the NFL, be that whatever.
Mm.
And to just kind of quash any sort of fan sentiment that we are so totally prepared to completely shelve any of our own identity. What it is that makes why we support Spurs, you know? Okay, a lot of us support Spurs because a family member did, so we didn't really have a choice in the matter. But some people support Spurs because they were drawn to the mythology of the club. A lot of Americans, especially when I hear about them, constantly say, like on Twitter, whenever this conversation comes up, drawn to the idea of, like, you know, Americans love a plucky underdog. They like the nearly man. They like the guy who's kind of nearly there but not quite there, but still gives it his best. Kind of thing.
Yeah,
we're not that anymore. We just we are whatever Jose Mourinho wants to be, or whatever Antonio Conte wants us to be, and we just need to be happy with that. Otherwise, we're losers. And no, fuck that, man. Like you say, like, I want to go and watch Tottenham, and I want to enjoy it. And I felt that way under Pochettino. I don't care if we didn't win anything under him. Quite frankly, it doesn't take anything away from it. You know?
No, exactly. You touched upon something that when you think back to Poch and those kind of peak seasons, that was probably the only time where everybody on the outside of Spurs, pundits, even some rival fans, gave us credit.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And I'm not beggy. I don't need other football fans and definitely don't need pundits to define how I feel about my football club, right? Yes, it's often nice to hear something different to the normal noise that's directed at us and the club, especially from a kind of a Premier League narrative point of view, which is obviously, look, the Premier League is a very overproduced kind of product, and they're always going to amplify Man United and Liverpool and the clubs that kind of help push their brand the world over. So Spurs are always going to be this kind of like, ooh, why can't you do any better? Spurs should be doing any better. Levy is letting down everyone. And in the same breath, you know, I think Kane needs to go to Man United to win things. It's like, you don't even know what you're talking about here. We should be celebrated as a team that's trying to puncture, you know, the top tier of the Premier League and trying to do something different rather than maligned constantly as these kind of grand failures. But Poch had us in a position, Poch had us in a position where everybody kind of stood up and took notice. And you know, you had Gary Neville saying we were the best footballing side in the country. You know, you had rival fans, like I said, saying I think Spurs will probably win the league in the next season or two. And it was all right. It was one less thing to worry about, I guess. People were actually watching Tottenham and saying, fuck me, they've got a team together here. And he appears to be the only person, really, from all the managers being linked, that can bring that back and kind of give the club a bit of protection and give us a little bit of quiet time as we kind of crack on. Now, I'm not saying there aren't potentially better managers out there. I mean, I didn't predict Pochettino to have the success he did at Spurs when he came. And I use the word success in the how I was made to feel is greater than any feeling that I've had, you know, in my life as a Spurs fan. I have to go back to the late 80s. And, you know, as much as, for example, beating Chelsea at Wembley in the League Cup was a fantastic day out, and it was made even better because of what we did to Arsenal in the semi-final. It's a day I will never forget. I never think back to Robbie Keane and even Ledley King, who I fucking love both of those players. I don't think about them often. I think of Poch's team a lot.
Yeah.
I think of the players a lot. I think of the last-minute goals. I even think of the calamitous final 18 months and how we still somehow managed to get into the Champions League final when we should have probably won the fucking thing a season earlier, or the season that Juve knocked us out. So so what is that? How do you quantify that? Because it's not, do you quantify it by what did you win? Well, we won nothing, but we did under Ramos. I had to think about who the manager was, for fuck's sake. But how did Poch's team make me feel? It made me feel the very essence of what it is to be a football supporter, to feel absolutely wired and tethered to what it means to belong to a football club. Now, you're going to get people who are very transactional listening to this. They probably won't, to be fair, which is a benefit to you because it means you've got listeners who are willing to have these type of conversations.
Yeah, I thought you were mugging me off then, Spooky. No one's listening to this.
it's the people that are like hyper transactional, yeah. Like, you know, well, what did Poch do at Tottenham? He didn't do nothing, mate. We didn't win anything. Oh, pretty football. And it's like, so you're wiping everything away. You're literally wiping the journey away. You're wiping all those moments that kind of build up to momentum and build into hope and belief. And those things are the fundamentals of football. They're the things that drive you to the next game and fuel you to thinking something might happen. And it's that anticipation is what football is. And if you're lucky enough, you get across the line. And Spurs have been, I mean, probably our own obstacles have stopped us from getting over the line sometimes. But But that's Spurs. And yeah, I'm a little bit fed up with that as well. That at some point, are we going to get it right? And it's the universe, I think, has got a very perverse sense of humour because of what's going on this season. If you look at the top of the Premier League and you think, how's our luck? How does that even work? How does the fucking algorithm of the footballing universe churn that shit out when we've been trying over and over again? And maybe we just need to stop trying as hard as we're trying right now and just take a step back, appoint someone who understands what it means to be Tottenham Hotspur, and then just build on the traits that we have definitely built on in the last 15 plus years. We're not a soft touch, right? Like, we generally know how to battle and how to fight. And there's a lot of things that Mourinho and Conte have given us. Even AVB, you can look at most of the managers we've had. There's different traits that we've built up over time. What we don't have is that foundation, that experience, that kind of in-house culture of winning the league or winning lots of cups recently. And a lot of other football clubs have that. And it does, you can change the players, you can change the manager, but that bit of history is there and it's recent. And I think we kind of lack a little bit of depth there. But that's not to say we're not learning. Obviously, we need to get it right in terms of what Levy and the club are doing with the appointment and stop obsessing about we've got to get top four, we've got to get top four, we've got to get top four. But if we don't, we might win the league the following season because of the other work that's going on. Think outside the box a little bit. Think about the longevity of what it is we're trying to do. Revenue's not a problem anymore. Do you know what I mean? We should be competitive. So how do you become competitive and do so with a bit of a robust personality about yourselves rather than this two or three season reboot? And I know a lot of football clubs work like that, but let's stop fucking comparing ourselves to everything out there. Let's just remember who we are again and just grab that identity back.
But this
we're lacking it.
But this is part of the problem, mate, right? Because, you know, we've spoken about this plenty of times before, the kind of the back forth internal thoughts and feelings about Daniel Levy and the way in which the club is run, in a footballing sense at least. I mean, really, with regard to them, I'm totally checked out now on Enoch, and I'm definitely checked out on Paratici, because I think this is kind of part of the... This is part of the...
Would you get rid of the director of football then? And actually, Jack, there's two questions for you, mate.
Mm.
Because he's still there, and supposedly he's involved in looking for the next manager, which is a bit weird considering his ban and his potential... I don't know what other charges might be chucked at him. Or are we reading too much into the media? Like, Poch comes back, does he work under a director of football? You know, like, does he work directly with Levy again? Are we opening up old wounds in terms of Levy is then more involved in the football?
I think it seems to be that, we're going to need a director of football, because I think Daniel Levy is going to be able to override a manager too much. We've seen that kind of in the past. And for all the kind of talk that he's not involved, come on, do me a favour. Like, we all... Daniel Levy is a control freak. We know this, right? We know this about him. He's going to be involved in the running of a club, but I guess maybe just in terms of a job title sense, like, in, you know, I don't know, suits tend to identify with one another, right? And I think maybe having a director of football there, maybe Levy will be more willing to, like, listen to somebody who has one eye on business and one eye on the football side of things, right? And I think
Paratici's done all right, though, right? Just in terms of...
Yeah, I think to a degree, yes. I mean, he's probably lucked out a bit with Kulusevski, Bentancur as well. I mean, I think my biggest worry about it is really if Luis Enrique is top of our list. I mean, I would seriously question what team it is and what squad it is that Fabio Paratici is watching and is overseeing, because we one of the biggest failings in this squad, in this team, and we've been saying this for years, is our really on an individual level, our lack of technical quality. There are so few players that are able to kind of pass the ball around crisply. Luis Enrique absolutely definitely requires players that can do that, you know, to even get the best out of it. Like he's obviously had his best period when he's had MSN playing for him and all other host of stars, but it's probably unfair to hold that against him. He's still, you know, they were one of the best ever football teams going after Pep Guardiola's Barcelona as well. But again, it just feels like a fit that is not in keeping with, as we've sort of spoken about, the culture and the ethos of this club. Again, you know, and I can see it going that way, or I can see us bringing back Tuchel. I'm losing hope by the day that Pochettino will be back again. Because whatever, I guess Paratici just feels that he won't have enough control in that circumstance. But like you say, you know, it's not even an alleged thing. This is a guy that's potentially going to be banned from football, or maybe, I think maybe even imprisoned, you know? He's still running a kind of a major, basically effectively running one of the biggest football, people can say, well, what have you won? One of the biggest football teams in Europe, yeah. One of the biggest football teams in the world. Yeah. Like, what are we playing at? And this is kind of where, you know, because the whole kind of we go again, we believe, we build to a point. I just think, again, touching on what you were saying at the start, mate, I just think the will isn't there anymore. I feel that from everybody's just tired of this now. Everybody's tired of this kind of dance, you know. Arsenal are coming back now. They're going to win the league. Like, probably. I think they're going to do it. Like, I'm pretty certain they've done it. And in the time that they've been apparently shit, they've won, what, two or three FA Cups have they won? And
you're bringing me down, Jack. You're bringing me down. Get to your point.
Previously, they won the Premier. There's not really a point, mate. It's just that I just want to feel that, like, there's some hope that Tottenham can get something, even if it's not Pochettino. Like, get somebody in. I want to get somebody in that we can make ours, you know? And it just feels to me that, like, an Enrique or a Marco Silva or somebody like this, it's like...
But this is where the overlap is,
you know? Like,
this is the overlap, though. I think it's that you can be critical of Levy in the club, right? But I think that Levy shouldn't be as naive as he has been. For someone that is such a great businessman, whether you like that tagline or not, you know, he's built us into a £1 billion entity, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And some people say, well, I mean, that was always going to happen. Mate, it's not that fucking easy to do. Like, you might think in your head, sat in your bedroom on your laptop, that it's easy to turn Tottenham into a club that's worth supposedly, like, you know, over 4 billion quid. He's incredibly astute when it comes to those type of things. Not so astute when it comes to the football. Possibly a little bit naive. In his heart, I think he wants us to be successful. The application and the delivery of that is where it breaks down. And out of the desperation of achieving what you're talking about, just getting across the line a couple of times and then understanding what it took to be able to then do it again, and it becomes a more comfortable thing. That's how you kind of create this culture of winning, right? And to do that, I think he's tried to take, and not even shortcuts, I mean, in his head and in most of our heads at some point, we probably entertained the fact that Mourinho might be able to do that. He's done it everywhere else. Conte is arguably, at the time, one of the best managers on the planet, and he'll probably go somewhere else, go back to Italy and win something easily again, you know, and you kind of question, well, why has he done it there and he hasn't done it at Spurs? I think, first of all, the Premier League is the hardest fucking league on the planet. And yes, there is potential for you to elevate yourself in terms of circumstances, in terms of other clubs having a kind of a drop-off, which is what's happened this season. Not taking anything away from the Scum. They're doing what they need to do game to game. They're very hard to beat. They're very comfortable in themselves. They have identity. And it's annoying as hell seeing them do this. Not that I watch any of their games. But
And with Spurs, we try to get over the line in these kind of very kind of anti-Tottenham types of ways, because we've tried everything else and it hasn't quite worked. So I think the club are trying their best. It just doesn't pay off. And you're right. I think you have to just pull everything back and remember what it is that we want to be from day to day. Remember that it shouldn't be this kind of like end of days. If it doesn't happen this season, it's never going to happen bullshit, because Spurs are always in amongst it. Spurs have always got, they always end up with a gem of a player. We've always got world-class players. We're always discovering or just creating, birthing absolute icons of football. We just never have them at the same time, right? We never have them all together with the right manager. But if we just bring it back a little bit and appoint, whether it's Pochettino or someone else who can be given as much time as he needs, and we all buy into it because he talks to us on a level and we connect with him and he isn't just like hot air, it's actually things that do resonate, then that gives him time and it gives us an understanding that we're going somewhere. Now, that might not work completely, because unfortunately there's still an element of supporters that will turn on someone if they don't see results immediately. I mean, you can say that about Conte. He's not even had a full season at Tottenham yet. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. a proper full... So you could say, are we overreacting? Are we impatient? Them lot down the road wanted Arteta out numerous amounts of times. So there's a point, in fact, under his tenure early on where people, gooners, were basically saying, I don't know what this guy's trying to do. I don't see a style. I don't see anything here. The fuck is he doing? They persevered. Now, maybe they persevered because they didn't have anyone else to come in. And they thought, fuck it, let's just keep him and see what happens. And it's turned out to be all right. And you got to be lucky in football. And sometimes it is to do with moments. And I think Spurs are trying to create the moment rather than waiting for it to happen organically. And again, I get that we need to be in Champions League because the club needs to keep up appearances with sponsors and to earn this revenue and that revenue. Just pull yourself back, Daniel, mate, and just think about the money that you will make if you sacrifice a bit of that revenue, whatever it is, and you look ahead at a team that's finishing in the top two every season. And suddenly is a team that could probably win the Champions League. And then all those other revenues will just expand and it'll just be ridiculous. And then you could put more towards the team. These, again, currently sat in an office pretending I understand football and business and the rest of it. But you just think, have a bit of patience within the club. And then it becomes more believable for us on the outside, paying the money that we do to go to games and watch football. You just need to, you have to buy into it. And it's these notions, these sentimental notions that actually mean a lot more than they do. Do you know what I'm saying? It means so much more to have something that everybody agrees. That's my fucking football club. That is fucking Tottenham Hotspur, that. And I see myself in it. And at the minute, we're looking in the mirror and we can see Mourinho. We look in the mirror, we can see Conte. And there's lots of good things about those two guys. Unfortunately, not a lot of good things whilst they've been at Tottenham. So I don't know. It worries me as well, mate, because I think I want that comfort blanket. I want Pochettino back for the reasons that you've given. Like, let's just go back and see what happens. It's going to happen someday. Might as well be
now.
Let's
just have a breather from these conversations that we've been having that feel like an eternity now. Do you know what I mean? This kind of constant, what's Levy's plan? What's Paratici's plan? Where are we heading as a club? I thought the stadium was supposed to be a game changer. Why is the football not fun? You're a loser if you care about football being fun. Well, I just want a break from that for a bit. It's just, like people have said, just like putting on kind of like a comfortable pair of jeans, you know, a pair of jeans that you know you can just put on for a bit and it's fine. You know, that's kind of, because yes, I do obviously have like an outwardly strong personal connection to Maurizio Pochettino. I love him as a manager. I love the time that we had and everything. But
do you think enough time's passed?
Yeah, like, and I honestly, mate, to me, now is kind of the now or never moment for me, I think, with him. Because I think he's just young enough where he's kind of, you know, I think his ideas are probably still quite fresh and he could probably still get something out of them. I'm sure the lads on the extra inch would be able to kind of go into this on a deeper level, but to me, there isn't an awful lot of difference between what we're seeing Arsenal doing at the moment to what we were doing a few years ago under Pochettino, yeah. And it's still working, yeah. Right? Do you know what I mean? Front foot, positive football, core values of belief, fighting hard for one another, and kind of not giving up on any. You know, that 3-2 against Bournemouth the other day, that was peak Pochettino Tottenham. That was Southampton away, you know?
Yeah, so that was
kind of, it's,
that was sickly, man. That was absolutely, that, I mean, that was probably the moment I thought, yeah, the these pricks have got, they've got the template for it, and it's made easier by what Pep is doing. And I kind of, I think I probably tapped out the season at that point, to be fair. I was like, fuck this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, why are we, why is it compounded with that? I mean, if they were below us or just a couple of points ahead of us, it would make the season a little bit more easier to stomach, right? And
it would.
I don't define myself by them lot, but you're right. It's a rivalry. If you don't hate them, and if they don't make you feel a little bit shitty, then it isn't a rivalry. And they're the only football club I can really say that bother me constantly, and that's the way it should be. There should be this hate relationship with the scumbags. But it's, again, to go back to the universe, it dishes out the wallops, man, when it comes to Tottenham. And I'm kind of fed up with that as well. It's just like, grab it by the scruff of the neck, Spurs. But do so knowing who you are. And at the minute,
exactly,
we don't know who we are, really. And it's a massive, massive problem. And Levy has to wake up to that. And he needs to wake up to it really quickly.
Well, on a cheery note, mate, because coming towards the end of the podcast, but there has been some talk today that Tottenham are putting all of their energy now into, ahead of a new manager search, putting all of their energy into convincing Harry Kane to stay at the club and to be the, you know, the numero uno man. It feels like we're almost going to offer him an Mbappe type deal where he is an actual kind of like satellite football director in a way, that he's going to have decisions in things like managerial searches and the direction of the club and
such. I love that.
I love it, mate. But do you, what's your gut tell you on Harry Kane? Does he stay at Tottenham?
This is a
real cheer-a-rama today, isn't it?
It's been good because I think this is my point. You can't do this on Twitter. You can't do this in chat, right? I think my gut is telling me he leaves, right? But then when I try to think about it pragmatically, what does that actually mean? Does it mean that he goes this summer for a fee? Does it mean he goes next summer? Does he stay another season as part of this kind of transitional period at Spurs? And if he goes on a free, is that something that we would allow? Does that make it risky in terms of who you might join if he goes on a free? So there's all these little things that start kind of pulling me back and thinking, what's on his mind? Has he changed since the Gary Neville interview on the golf course? You know, is he looking at that record, Shearer's record? Is he thinking about doing it in one club rather than going elsewhere, better the devil you know, and finding the, you know, I mean, he should be, you know, I was talking about this the other day on my pod that, you know, wherever he goes, he will probably be one of the best players at that football club. But you never quite know what might happen. Do you know what I mean? There's an aura. You know, at Spurs, he's the one that we look to. He spearheads our attack. He drops into midfield. He defends. He does all that kind of stuff. So is that playing on his mind? Is he thinking, actually, fuck it. Like, the connection I have with Spurs is strong enough for me not to obsess about trophies. And if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. So there's all these things, the type of things that we talk about. And I don't know whether it's a defensive mechanism on my part. I don't really want to entertain him wearing a United shirt or wearing a City shirt. And so it's my gut is telling me one thing, and then my head is saying, well, hold on a minute. You know, maybe it's a little bit different. But then there's echoes of what happened under Gareth Bale. You know, even though I had people telling me he's definitely going, I was like, yeah, but is he going to go? And it's like, in the end, it was like, oh my God, how naive was I to think he wasn't going to go to Real Madrid with this guy literally as a child wanted to play for Real Madrid. With Kane, he can play until he's 38 probably, and he probably won't, to be fair. He's probably going to be in the NFL, or he's probably going to join Bale back on the golf courses in the US. But he will sustain his career a lot longer than most strikers, simply because of his intelligence and his ability, his capacity to be more than just a goal scorer. So maybe he can afford another season at Tottenham. I don't know. But a contract, that ties him in. So the question might be, is what the fuck does Spurs need to do to convince Kane that we're going to get it right when we have failed time and time again to get it right? And so then that brings me back again. Fucking hell, I'll finish this in a second. It brings me back again to Kane thinking, it ain't going to work in my generation as a Spurs fan and as a Spurs player. And I have to move on. And it'd be ironic, right? He'll leave the football club and we finally win something. And we'd be like, only Spurs could avoid winning something with their greatest ever player and then win something without him.
Phil, who's mate of the show, he's always saying that, though. He's always saying, you know what's going to happen. Soon as Kane and Son go, we're going to start winning stuff again.
Yeah. Maybe that's what we need as a football club as well. Like, we talk about this restart. We talk about becoming something, you know, beyond those two players. And maybe at some point we have to deal with that reality. We have to move on. We're not going to be able to replace Kane. But we will have a different dynamic. And that doesn't mean it's going to be anything worse. It just won't be the same. And it will feel weird. It will feel surreal. It won't feel like something that's familiar to us. But that is football. We've lost lots of great players, maybe not as someone as important to us than Harry Kane, but that is life, mate. We have to move on with it, and we can't be fearful of that. We need to grow a pair of bollocks when it comes to stuff like this. As a football club, if they want to offer him something unbelievably, you know, appetizing in terms of finances and influence, he might value that more than going to City and winning the league in his first season, which will look great on his wall, right? But in his heart, how's he going to really feel? And I know people are going to be thinking, mate, you know, it's winning something. Of course he's going to feel something. He's going to be playing week in, week out with these players. And the sense of achievement will be, you know, something tangible. It's not fraudulent just because he's gone to a super club with elite players everywhere. But in his heart, it won't mean as much as winning something at Tottenham. Because when we finally do win something, Jack, and we will, it will feel better than absolutely anything any other football fan has ever had. Obviously, because we've won it. And obviously because it's probably the greatest edging session anybody has ever experienced in history. So like, it will be absolutely orgasmic when it does happen for this football club. And maybe part of Kane's thinking is, what if?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.